This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Baby, give it up, turn it loose.
I think it'd be probably a lot better if you would just donate your stock to a nonprofit and add to their stock portfolio. And I think you could probably do that tax-free as well. I'm not sure. But I think to me, the bigger issue is just making sure that the donor advised fund money actually goes to charities.
This week, we dip into the Sea Change Radio archives to re-explore two discussions about charitable giving. First, we speak with Taisha Ty Wilson, the director of engagement at a nonprofit called Philanthropy Together, whose mission is to advance charitable giving. That's people-centered and equitable. We learn all about giving circles, how our organization facilitates them, and the importance of Black-led collective giving. Then we turn our attention to learn more about the financial instrument known as a donor-advised fund, or DAF, from journalist Alex Koch. We examine the role of DAF fiduciary sponsors, particularly big investment firms like Fidelity, Vanguard, and Schwab, and explore the question of who should be held accountable when a donor-advised fund facilitates donations to red-flagged hate groups.
All right. Holding on. N-O-U. Ow! Ah! Baby. Give it up.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Taisha Ty Wilson. She is the Director of Engagement at Philanthropy Together. Taisha, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex, for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So explain the idea behind Philanthropy Together and your giving circle model.
Yes. Well, so Philanthropy Together, we are a five-year initiative, and our mission is very, very straightforward. We're on a bold mission to democratize and to diversify philanthropy through the power of collective giving. Our organization exists solely to support giving circles. Specifically, we offer training for individuals and organizations, showing them, Alex, how to start giving circles, how to host them, how to sustain them, how to maintain them, grow them, as well as we are in the business of just amplifying all of the 15, I think there's over 3,500 giving circles and counting. That we've counted so far on our global giving circle directory. So for the existing giving circles that are out there, we provide supportive services for them in terms of just like resources, templates, facilitation training, consultancy work, things like that to really help them to sustain and to grow their existing giving circles.
So you're talking about starting a giving circle. Let's say I wanted to start one. I was passionate about an issue and I thought I could do more than just setting up a GoFundMe page or giving my own money. I wanted to use the power of my community. How would I connect with Philanthropy Together to create a giving circle?
Yeah. So Alex, I know you're passionate about environmental justice, right?
Sure.
We'll use you as an example. You take your passion. So you have it in your heart. You want to start this giving circle. You will then join our Launchpad for You program. It's a free program and we have it priced as that because we don't want it to be a barrier of entry for especially our diverse communities that often join. And so you'll join Launchpad for You and you'll receive training where we'll show you the five primary steps that it takes to start your giving circle. And that looks like, one, gathering your people. So we'll show you and work with you ways and how you'll gather your people, like-minded people that are passionate about environmental justice like you, and how you can reach them. What does that messaging looks like? How do you advocate and pitch that to them to bring people along and to really to come with you and join forces with you to as the founding team and as the new members of the giving circle. And then once we work with you and train you on how to gather the folks, then the second step is really learning. You guys are, once you gather your people, Alex, y'all are going to talk y'all are going to have some conversations about the issues around environmental justice. And so Philanthropy Together, we train you on how to have those conversations and how to make some decision making within a collective around what organizations you all should fund, how the organizations are in alignment with your values, your core values as a group. And so that discourse piece, that second step, is a huge learning experience, especially for those who are entering philanthropy, because you're learning about not only the issues, but also just about organizations and that are working in that space to address the issues. So you all are learning about the issues, learning about these organizations or potential organizations that you'll like to fund. And already, before you have even pulled your resources, identifying the organizations that you want to fund. And I will lift up in that space, we often lift up the principles of trust-based philanthropy in that learning piece, where that looks like more equitable ways as funders. And now that you are philanthropists, we want you to fund well, fund more equitably than how we have traditionally seen more institutionalized philanthropy fund. So you gather your folks, we show you how to do that. We then decide, the third step is to then decide on where those funds should go. And so what that looks like is you all kind of really, you know, based on your values and your criteria that your giving circle have set, Alex, y'all will then decide collectively. Every person has a voice, and that's the beauty of a giving circle. Everyone would then decide who they think should receive the funding. And then the fun part, the fourth piece, is to then allocate out the funds. Y'all give it out. Once you decide on an organization, y'all pull those funds together. Every giving circle is different. So maybe, you know, your group, it will give $500 to this grant cycle annually. Or maybe we have some giving circles that have a model where they give a percentage of their income annually. Or we have some that give a dollar a day, so $365 annually. It all depends on, every giving circle is unique in terms of the member contributions. But what we do know is that those contributions are amplified. Your contribution, Alex, is amplified by the collective. So now we have more money. We have more money to give to these organizations, and we do just that. And then the final piece that you'll learn through our Launchpad for You program is then the beyond the dollar piece. So once we gather, we discuss, we decide, we pull our resources, we give the money out, but then what else? And so that is the beauty and the real uniqueness of giving circles, is that we don't stop at the dollar. A lot of giving circles give beyond the dollar. So we look at what other ways can we support these organizations that we have funded, and even the ones that did not receive the funding. How can we amplify them? How can we be advocates for the work that they're doing? So this is an engagement piece. This is a member engagement piece, where you're engaging your members, and you yourself, Alex, are engaging beyond the dollar. And you oftentimes will hear about the five T's, you know, your time, your talent, your treasure, your ties, your testimony. That's what we're talking about. And that final piece, that beyond the dollar, is beyond your treasure. How can you use your ties, which are your connections, your testimony, which is your voice, your advocacy, to advocate for these organizations beyond the dollar? And that pretty much is it. And that all of that, those five steps, we literally go and handhold folks through our Launchpad for You training, which in my opinion is extremely valuable for a person that is just, you know, wanting to start the giving circle, but just truly just don't know all that it takes and the steps that's required.
So I saw on your website a TED talk from your founder and CEO, Sarah Lomelin. She describes a very warm gathering where people are putting their heads together to try to find giving targets, recipients. I couldn't help but think that you started this right at the cusp of a global pandemic. How did that affect your launch in terms of starting to look at these gatherings as a combination of these warm dinners versus a Zoom call?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, because, you know, a lot of giving circles, including mine, I have a I'm a member, a chair-elect of a giving circle here based in Dallas. And we were meeting often. Pre-pandemic, we were in person having fun, and that energy cannot be replaced. But that was a challenge for us when we launched in 2020. But I think it also, with the quarantine and with everything shut down, it really allowed us to reach, expand our reach, not just to the U.S., but globally, because folks were online. Folks were online and still wanting to be in community. And so that really is that our, you know, the pandemic and just, you know, post-COVID engagement really worked to our advantage in 2020, because we saw record numbers of folks sign up. Actually, those were our highest numbers back then in 2020, 2021 for Lunchpad for You and Hosts, because people were, you know, looking to still be engaged, still move the needle for social change, but weren't able, you know, to safely do it in person. And so our training program, which is all of our programs, is all virtual, and we'll remain it, you know, we'll keep it that way for the bulk. But we have, you know, since then, we now have even been doing in-person giving circle trainings, as well as pop-up giving circle experiences and offering trainings at conferences and things like that. But, you know, just again, going back to your question, that time in Satter Talk, she talks about that, how the model was really, you know, of course, in person, because that's what it was pre-pandemic. But we saw more giving circles launch, virtual giving circles, more people joining giving circles virtually, and a lot of giving circles just adjusted to the times. And you know, so for virtual meetings and things like that, we all adjusted, the movement adjusted to the time. And so did we. And I think we were successful in that way.
How big is the average giving circle? Do you recommend like having at least 10 people, or is a 200 person max? Like, give us an idea of what the range ideally is.
Yeah, so 25 to 50 is the average range for a giving circle. However, you do have very large giving circles with 100 plus members, like those Impact 100 giving circles that exist out there. So you do have the larger ones. Those are kind of fewer in between than the ones that are within that sweet spot of about 25 to 50 members. My giving circle, we have about 57 ladies, and we launched in 2017. So we have kind of slow growth, but yeah, 25 to 50 is that sweet spot number. We try to suggest that because, again, the money that is moved is contingent on the amount of members and the members' contributions.
Does everybody give the same, or how do you decide, like, hey, if you're going to be part of this giving circle, be prepared to give at least $500 a year or whatever?
So every circle is different in terms of their member contributions. Most of them, and I shared this earlier, some of them are income percentage. So every member that joins that circle gives 1% of their income. Some of them have tiered membership levels, like my giving circle. We have two. We have a $500 level and we have a $1,000. So depending on what you can give, you flow yourself into a giving level. You have some that is just set. They don't have tiered membership contributions levels. It's just like a dollar a day, or $10 a month, or whatever the case. It just depends on the giving circle. But what all of them have is that every member that does join and that does contribute is entitled to one vote in terms of the decision-making and where those funds should go.
She's the Director of Engagement at Philanthropy Together, Taisha Ty Wilson. Taisha, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure talking to you.
In this world full of strife and confusion, starvation, drought, and pollution, we don't have much time to find a better way. We got to give more than we take. What a difference we could make. It's the only way. If we could give a little more than what's expected, do a little more than our share, go the extra mile to help each other, soon we'd surely see more peace and harmony. It's up to you and me to give a little more. What we need is more truthful information to understand this crucial situation. We got to work it out together like family.
I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Alex Koch. He is an investigative journalist and the co-founder of Opt Out Media Foundation. Alex, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot. Great to be here.
So explain to our listeners what Opt Out is. The Opt Out Media Foundation is a pretty bold new initiative.
Yeah, we're a 501c3 nonprofit charity currently based in New York City. And we advocate for financially independent news media. So we have a website with curated news content. We have an app that we developed ourselves. It's a news aggregation app with hand-curated news content as well from hundreds of financially independent, trustworthy newsrooms around the U.S. and Canada. That includes national players like The New Republic, The Nation, The Intercept, and a lot of state and local newsrooms around the country. So, you know, our goal is to elevate these independent media outlets and eventually through our app and our website and our newsletters, bring them into the national conversation and hopefully have them compete for airtime, you know, with the big corporate media outlets. So we also do original reporting, and we do collaborations often with members of our network like The New Republic.
And there's a piece that you published in partnership with The New Republic that I wanted to speak with you about today. It's entitled Blood Money, How America's Biggest Charities Are Bankrolling Hate Groups Without Anyone Noticing. So you did a lot of research into understanding the donor-advised fund. Why don't you first explain what a DAF is, a donor-advised fund, for our listeners?
Yes, a donor-advised fund is the kind of the fastest-growing method of making charitable donations in the U.S. So individuals and organizations can create their own charitable fund with a third-party, you know, money manager, who then will dole out the money to the charities that the donor specifies, kind of whenever or possibly never. So the idea is that you are transferring money in, you can transfer stocks in and not have to pay capital gains tax on the stocks and other appreciable assets into this fund that then the donor advised fund manager actually owns the money, but is generally responsive to your requests for whom will receive the money. Community foundations operate in a similar way in that, you know, you also have an account with the community foundation and then you would, quote, advise them as to where to send the money. One key element of both DAFs and community foundations is your name as a donor is anonymized. The donor advised fund manager, because it takes control of that money, is the donor to the ultimate recipient charity. And also, the donor advised fund sponsor does not have to submit your name to the IRS. So even internally, the U.S. government doesn't know where your money ultimately goes.
It sounds like a lot of these community foundations kind of encourage their clients to park their donor advised funds within the foundation, so then it kind of facilitates the giving process. So then the foundation can say, okay, these are our recommended giving targets for the year. You know, just check this box and you'll be part of our mass giving campaign.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of that. And we're also finding that a lot of private family foundations and even other kind of public charities often use donor advised fund managers. So I'm not really quite sure why the latter group would do it, but the former, again, you can hide your name as the ultimate donor to the charitable recipient.
I wanted you to take us through the troubling side that you found and why it's called blood money, because there's obviously there's some very good charities that are on the receiving end of charitable giving through donor advised funds, but obviously there's the flip side as well. Why don't you walk us through the genesis of this project?
Yeah, so I began reporting on donor advised fund managers, or also known as donor advised fund sponsors, donations to groups in the U.S. that the Southern Poverty Law Center considers hate groups. So these are predominantly anti-LGBTQ, anti-Muslim, anti-immigrant, and white nationalist hate groups. So unfortunately, a lot of the biggest charities in the country, which are these donor advised fund managers, are anonymously transferring their donor clients' money to a lot of these hate groups. And so over the last 4 years of reporting and data collection, I've now compiled a database that documents about $210 million that has gone from dozens of donor advised fund sponsors and community foundations to about 60 hate groups. And so some of the largest recipients of this money, who've gotten some of the biggest amounts, are very prominent anti-LGBTQ hate groups like Alliance Defending Freedom and Family Research Council. And you even have a white nationalist hate group, the VDARE Foundation, which has received over $1.5 million from donor advised fund sponsors since 2014. This is something that has been going on for a while and is showing no signs of stopping. And despite some of my reporting and reporting from others, most of these large financial institutions have not really taken responsibility for their role in funding hate, which in America continues to be on the rise.
So, Alex, with these donor advised funds, the generally wealthy individuals who the owners of these funds, they are limited in terms of direct political donations. So you couldn't give to like Donald Trump's super PAC or something through your donor advised fund.
Oh, no. You know, the donor advised fund managers have very few restrictions, but the one main restriction is the recipient has to be another 501c3 charity that is in good standing with the IRS. In other words, they're not being investigated for fraud or something like that, which actually the VDARE Foundation is being investigated for financial fraud right now.
So how culpable are these organizations? How complicit are they in the giving to hate groups? I don't quite understand. Like, aren't they just creating the vehicles for giving?
Yes, but every donor advised fund manager, let's say Fidelity Charitable, Vanguard Charitable, Schwab Charitable, those are some of the biggest charities in the country, by the way, by contribution revenue. Fidelity is the largest. These are charities. They have a board of directors like any other nonprofit would have. And, you know, if you look at the fine print, the board of directors has the ultimate call. Once a donor puts their money in the donor advised fund, they're actually donating to that fund. That's when they get their charitable tax deduction. So they're basically off the hook for any further action. But of course, most people are going to want to eventually send the money to an actual charity doing charitable work. So what they do is they recommend the recipients of their money, at how much and a certain date and everything. And ultimately, the board of directors of that donor advised fund manager has the final say as to where the money goes because they legally possess the money. So no, a middle management person, any staffer at these donor advised fund sponsors has no control over that. And I'm sure they're not encouraged to try to advise beyond what the board decides. So the board essentially decides, which foundations are kosher and which are not. And again, they very rarely refuse a donor's request. But yes, they have full legal control over the money. And that's why people like me are trying to hold them accountable, despite, their lack of comment on my latest story.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to investigative journalist and the co-founder of Opt Out, Alex Koch. This week's show is dedicated to the memory of Robbie Robertson. So, Alex, I'm a little hazy on the role and the makeup of the board of directors on a donor advised fund. Let's say Fidelity controls 25,000 donor advised funds. Do they have a separate board of directors for each one, or is that just one advisory board of directors that handles all of the DAFs that are parked at Fidelity?
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the individual donor advised funds don't have boards themselves. I mean, they're just, it might be just one person's charitable fund. It's often just one person's charitable fund. But, you know, the many thousands of DAFs that these managers, you know, manage are all part of the same organization. So let's say, you know, if they manage 25,000, all of the dollars, if you add them up for all of those 25,000 DAFs, is the money that they are in control of. So Fidelity Charitable Investments, that is a donor advised fund manager that has one board, you know, and those board members determine which recipients are kosher and which are not.
And the donor advised fund itself, is that something that you think needs to be adjusted? Is the structure, the fundamental structure, going back to what the New York Times wrote about, it's being kind of a way to dodge capital gains tax and et cetera, is the DAF itself something that you think needs to be reevaluated?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, there was a bipartisan bill in the Senate last year which sought to reform the sort of payout requirements, or should I say the lack of a payout requirement from donor advised funds. So like I said, when you're funding your fund, you put the money in, that's when you get your charitable tax deduction. So you don't have to actually give the money out of your fund at all. Fidelity Charitable doesn't have to actually dole that money out. So it could literally sit there forever. And no real charity that's doing charitable work on the ground would receive it. So that this Senate bill was trying to put a requirement, you know, a certain number of years, I'm not sure how many years, that money that goes into a DAF has to come out of the DAF and really go to a recipient charity. Because otherwise the charitable tax deduction, which, you know, really is U.S. taxpayers are subsidizing all charities, right, and all charitable tax deductions. So, you know, the taxpayers are subsidizing these charitable donations that don't necessarily end up at a charity. And so that's the fundamental problem, I think, with DAFs. The issue of you know, capital gains, not having to pay capital gains tax. I mean, I don't feel like I need to input on that. I mean, I think that charitable donations should be honored. I think it'd be probably a lot better if you would just donate your stock to a nonprofit and add to their stock portfolio. And I think you could probably do that tax-free as well. I'm not sure. But I think to me, the bigger issue is just making sure that the donor advised fund money actually goes to charities.
He's the co-founder of Opt Out, and he's an investigative journalist, Alex Koch. Alex, thanks so much for being my guest on SeaChange Radio.
No, thanks a lot for delving into this and tackling a pretty complicated subject. I appreciate you sharing my work.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to SeaChange Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by James Brown, Eric Bibb, and the Grateful Dead. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to SeaChange Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For SeaChange Radio, I'm Alex Wise.